Our speaker today is Ingmar Persson, who's the Professor of Practical Ethics at the University of Gothenburg. And he's going to be speaking to us about prioritarianism, and we're lucky to have another expert in prioritarianism, Derek Parfitt, to give a response. So Ingmar's going to talk for about half an hour, and then they'll have a discussion. If there's time for questions at the end, we'll do that. But so I'll let Ingmar make a start right away. Join me in welcoming Ingmar Persson, please.
Thank you very much. I'm very honoured to have Derek as my respondent. I've learned more from Derek, much more from Derek than from any other philosopher, dead or alive. And for that reason, I should perhaps be fearful rather than honoured to have him as a respondent, because there's a risk that I will learn today from him that I've been mistaken about certain things. Anyway, what I'm going to talk about is some claims that Derek makes in his lecture, Equality and Priority. In that lecture, he claims that egalitarianism is exposed to the levelling down objection. More precisely, he claims that teleological, not deontological, egalitarianism is exposed to this objection. The difference between these views is that while both are concerned about unjust or unfair inequality, deontological egalitarianism takes injustice to exist only in situations which have been brought about by wrongdoing, by moral agents. Whereas, according to deontological egalitarianism, there are so-called natural unjust inequalities that brought about some people being born disabled and things like that. The levelling down objection is to the effect, I suppose many of you know it, that if we consider a population where some are better off than somebody else, and we decrease the well-being of the better off, we lower the better off down to the level of the worse off.
We don't have to do it, it happens.
Yes. Okay, it happens. A change like that is, according to teleological egalitarianism, in one respect for the better, because now the equality doesn't exist anymore, or it's a smaller inequality. In another respect, it's a change for the worse, because some people have become worse off, nobody's become better off. So one might think of teleological egalitarianism as consisting of two principles. One principle about saying something like it's bad in itself if some individuals are unjustly worse off than some other individuals, a principle of equality. The other, a principle of utility or beneficence, saying that it's better or morally better if individuals are better off rather than worse off. Or saying something like it's better that there is a bigger, a greater sum of benefits. And it is the first principle, the principle of equality, according to which the levelling down situation is, in one respect, is something better, namely, it's better in terms of equality, whereas it's worse according to the principle of utility. It might be, all things considered, a change, levelling down might be a change for the worse, but all the same, egalitarians are committed, teleological egalitarians are committed to saying that in one respect, this is a change for the best, although nobody is better off and some are worse off, namely those who are better off. Now, Derry claims that there is another view called prioritarianism, or the priority view, which avoids this objection. The prioritarianism says something like, and Derek usually formulates as saying that it's more morally important to benefit those who are worse off than those who are better off. Or alternatively put, you can say that the weight, the moral weight or value of a benefit is determined by the absolute level of the recipient of this benefit. So if the recipient is somebody who's worse off, the benefit has a higher moral weight or value than if the recipient is somebody who is better off. I believe that prioritarianism, just like egalitarianism, is committed to an impersonal value. Egalitarianism is committed to an impersonal value of equality, saying that it's bad that there is unjust or unfair inequality. This isn't something which is bad, necessarily bad for people. Take a personal value, such as, for instance, a pleasure. It's good for people to feel pleasure. It's good for them to feel. But to feel as much pleasure as somebody else does isn't something that is good for you, for the people who have this pleasure. Now, the prioritarian impersonal value is to the effect that prioritarianism says that if we are to distribute a benefit such as a pleasure, it has greater moral weight if we give this benefit to somebody who's worse off than to somebody who's better off. But it is, to feel pleasure or have a benefit is as good for the person who's better off as for the person who's worse off. So it doesn't have any... the pleasure, the benefit, isn't better for the worse off than it is for the better off. This is an impersonal value, the fact that giving the benefit to the worse off is something that makes the outcome better than giving it to the better off person. Now, as I said, Derry claims that prioritarianism avoids the levelling down objection, and the reason he thinks so is that it makes no difference, he says, to our concern, to the prioritarian concern for the worse off people, whether there are people who are better off. So it doesn't make any difference to that concern if we level down the better off people. Now, that claim is perfectly correct, but it doesn't follow, I will argue, from that claim that prioritarianism isn't exposed to the levelling down objection, because there might be other respects in which this outcome is better. So it would be true on prioritarianism that in one respect levelling down is better. To see that this is the case, I want to have a look at a series of cases where the sum of benefits in all outcomes is the same. And it's also the case that there is equality nobody's better off than anyone else in this in these outcomes. What differs in those outcomes is the number of people or individuals existing. So I'm going to
I think it's so simple that I think you don't need to join.
It's so simple I don't need to join. Okay.
Yeah.
That's something I learned from you already. Okay. The first outcome, which is an outcome I call 1 to 100. So I better write it down.
One person at level 100.
Yes, but I don't want to repeat that every time.
No. Well, then you can say 2 at 50, 4 at 25, ending up with 100 at 1. That's clear enough.
So we have the first outcome here. Somebody, one person is at a level of 100. This is the outcome I call 100, okay? And I went... And then we have a second outcome, which would be 250, where people are, two people at a level of 50. And eventually we have an outcome here, which is 101, okay? Now, these outcomes, according to both utilitarianism and egalitarianism, these outcomes will be equally good, all things considered. If we apply these views, utilitarianism, egalitarianism, to these cases involving different people, different number of people, we get a result that these outcomes are equally good. But if we apply prioritarianism to these outcomes, we get a result that this outcome here is the best one, and all things considered, and this is the worst one. Why is that? That's because benefits here have the greatest moral weight they can have in this series. Because benefits here go to people who are worse off. So they have a sort of maximal moral weight here. Because prioritarianism says that it's sort of benefits to the worse off have a greater moral weight. Whereas in this case, some benefits here, up here, have a very low moral weight because they go to somebody who is well off. So the benefits sort of get their weight, the weight of the benefits increases as we go down here in this outcome 101. They have the maximum one. So this is what I've summarized on the first point on the handout. According to prioritarianism, an outcome 101, in which 100 individuals each has one unit of welfare, is better, all things considered, than an outcome 1-100, in which one individual enjoys all 100 units. But according to both egalitarianism and utilitarian, these outcomes are equally good. And this means that prioritarianism implies something I call the desirability of welfare diffusion. It's better, all things considered, if a quantity of welfare is distributed over as many recipients as possible, so that each recipient gets a minimal benefit. Now, if that is so, that the last outcome is better, all things considered. Then this is the second point in the handout. There must be some respect in which this outcome is better. and that is that the average moral weight of value of a unit of welfare is higher in its outcome 100 to 1, since the recipients of benefits here are worse off. Now, this is an impersonal, as I said, this is an impersonal weight of value, because the benefit is not better for those who are worse off than for those who are better off. Now, if we were to gradually reduce the number of people who receive benefits in the last outcome, 101, reduce it to 99 people, 98 people, and so on, and so reduce, decrease the sum of benefits in that outcome, it's still that for a while that outcome still is better, all things considered, according to prioritarianism, than the first outcome, and so on, because it's reasonable to say that although the sum of benefits is smaller in these outcomes, it's still the case that because the moral weight is certainly the average moral weight of a benefit is so much greater in these outcomes, that outweighs the fact that there's a smaller sum of benefit. If that wasn't the case, that sort of the greater weight, moral weight of a benefit could outweigh the sum, it couldn't be the case that, say, if we were to decide whether to give 2 units, two units of benefit to the better off, or 1 unit to somebody who's much worse off, that the latter could be the best. That presupposes that the weight, the moral weight of a benefit, can outweigh the size of the benefit. Now, eventually, however, if we go on reducing this number of people in this outcome, we'll get to a point where the outcome is no longer better, all things considered. But it would still be better in one respect, namely this respect that the average moral value or weight of benefits is higher than in the first outcome, 101. Yes. So now we have then a situation in which an outcome is better in one respect, though it's not better, or it's worse, all things considered, because we have sort of reduced the sum of benefits so much. Now, that is precisely what I claim is the case in the levelling down situation. What this reasoning leads up to is that we can view, reformulate prioritarianism as consisting of 2 principles. The first principle says that it's better if the sum of benefits, this isn't on the handout for the reason that something I struck me this morning. It may be mistaken, but anyway. It's better if the sum of benefits is greater. That's the one principle. And the second principle is that it's better or better if the average weight of benefits is higher. Now these are the two principles one can see prioritarianism to consist of, according to this reformulation. And the second principle is a counterpart to the teleological principle, which we can reformulate as follows. It's better if unjust inequalities are minimized. Right. Now, it is this second principle here which, according to which, makes it the case that prioritarianism is exposed to the levelling down objection, because in the levelling down situation, it is the case that the average weight of benefits is higher, increases, because those benefits with the lower moral weight, the benefits of the better off, they disappear. So what remains are the benefits who have the greater weight, so the average weight of benefits goes up. And that principle is a counterpart, or sort of is what replaces this principle of teleological egalitarianism, which exposes the leveling egalitarianism to leveling down objection. So we have the reason why prioritarianism is exposed to the levelling down objection is that it has a principle of the same sort as egalitarianism. Which this might be obscured by the way prioritarianism is ordinarily formulated, but I try to sort of bring out that prioritarianism consists of these two principles by considering these cases, the series of cases, where we have an outcome which is better all things considered if we apply prioritarianism to it, but it's the same as sum of benefits is the same. So there must be another respect in which this outcome is better. Now, because both prioritarianism and egalitarianism are exposed to the levelling down objection, they are violating a principle that Derek calls the person affecting claim. And this is something you have on the handout, in the middle of the handout. This principle, PAC, PAC, says that an outcome can't be better or worse than another in any respect unless it's better or worse for someone. Now, both prioritarianism and egalitarianism violate that principle for the reason that they are committed to an impersonal value, I claim. But there's a weaker person-affecting claim, which I called PAC star. And it says that an outcome can't be better than another, all things considered, unless it's better for somebody. So this thing talks about what's better, all things considered, not just better in one respect. Uh, this is the principle that both egalitarianism and prioritarianism can respect. Egalitarianism can respect that principle if it's what Derrida calls moderate. And this is something you also find on the handout. Egalitarianism is moderate if, again, inequality is achieved simply... inequality is achieved simply by a loss of benefit, the latter always outweighs the former, and the loss of benefit always outweighs the gain of equality. Somebody has to gain something in order for the equality to be better off. So, for instance, if we were to make a situation better in respect of equality by sort of removing two benefits from the better off and adding one to the worse off, that's an outcome which would be worse according to utilitarianism, because the sum of benefits go down. But it could be better according to the moderate version of egalitarianism. But an outcome in which we simply remove benefits for somebody can't be better on that moderate version. And there's another similar doctrine which I called anti-inegalitarianism. And this is that, says that also in the handout, says that an unjust inequality in respect of the distribution of benefit is something bad in itself that detracts from the value of an outcome, but just equality is not anything good in itself that adds positively to the value of an outcome. This principle implies that if we have an outcome in which there are no benefits whatsoever, everyone is at a zero level, there's nothing good about that outcome, although there's equality. So equality, just equality, doesn't add positively to the value of an outcome. It's only the case that an unjust inequality detracts from the value, makes it less than it would be if we were to consider the total sum of benefit. Now, prioritarianism could respect that principle, the weaker person-affecting claim, if prioritarians are accept what I call the value of beginning to exist, namely if they say that it's good for somebody to begin to exist and lead a worthwhile life. If they don't say that sort of thing, but they still say that an outcome like 101, the last outcome on the black one, is better, but not better for somebody, they will violate this weaker person-affected claim, because in that case we will have an outcome which is better, all things considered, though it isn't better for anyone. So prioritarians, I think, will have to accept this view of the value of beginning to exist if they want to be conformed to the weaker person-affecting claim. And I think they will have to do that, because otherwise it would be strange for them to sort of criticize egalitarianism for violating the stronger person-affecting claim. But let me emphasize one thing at the end, namely that I haven't presupposed that we apply these doctrines like prioritarianism, egalitarianism, utilitarianism, and so on, to these cases where we have a different number of recipients of benefits. All I'm saying that if I'm talking about what these doctrines would say if they were applied to those cases. This is all I need, because what I wanted to arrive at is the claim that prioritarianism consists of these two principles on the blackboard. Because if that is the right way of construing prioritarianism, it is exposed to levelling down objections and even to wealth problems, because prioritarianism will imply that in the levelling down situation, the outcome continues to be better in one respect, even though we pass the point where the better off are at the same level as the worst off. When the benefits of the better off go down even further, that means that the average moral value of benefit goes up, and so the outcome will be in one respect better. So, actually, shifting from egalitarianism to prioritarianism because of the living down objection is jumping out of the frying pan into the fire, I would let my... That's what I have to say.
Right. Okay.
So we're going to do your response.
Yeah. First, I want to say something about the levelling down objection, which was in your paper, though you didn't actually say it in the talk. You say, I grant that egalitarianism is exposed to the levelling down objection, but I don't regard this objection as serious. Egalitarians should simply deny that there's anything counterintuitive about an outcome being better in one respect, although it's not better for anyone. Well, I think you there assume that... In presenting the levelling down objection, I'm appealing to the person affecting claim. How can it be in one way better if it's better for no one?
No, I don't.
But I actually wrote that the person affecting has less force than the levelling down objection. Mm. And I reject the person affecting claim, as you know. I reject even the weak person affecting claim that an outcome can't be worse, all things considered, if it's worse for no one. I think that's very often true, as is shown in cases that I call the non-identity problem. However, that's just about the strength of the levelling down objection as applied to egalitarianism. I mean, I think we can say there are some ways in which one of two outcomes might be better, though it's better for no one. That's certainly possible. But not if the only change is that the better off people become as badly off as everyone else. So it's that particular claim that the objection appeals to. Now, you make the striking claim that the priority view is also open to the levelling down objection of a slightly different form. Now, actually, it can be a simpler case than the one there. Suppose that everyone starts at level 100, and then everyone becomes much worse off, falls to the level of 10 benefits. Well, you say that that's in one way better, because the average value of the benefits that people are receiving is higher.
Yeah.
But as I intended the priority view, it doesn't appeal to the average value of benefits. It appeals to the total moral value of benefits. The difference between priority view and utilitarianism is simply that utilitarians say that it's better if there's a greater sum of benefits. Prioritarians say it's better if there's a greater weighted sum of benefits, with benefits doing more to make the outcome better, the worse off the people who receive them. And since the priority view appeals to the total sum of benefits weighted in that way, there's no respect in which it's a bad feature of the outcome if the average benefit per person has less moral value because they're better off, or a good feature if, because everyone's worse off, the average value is greater. So I'm just puzzled why you think that the priority view doesn't appeal to the total sum of weighted benefits, but only to the average sum. Now, in an earlier talk, you did suggest that the prioritarian might say that if everyone becomes much worse off, so that the average value of the benefits they receive is greater, that isn't a good feature of the outcome. It's a bad feature of the outcome. And then you suggested, well, that would imply that on the priority view, it would be in one way worse if everyone became better off. But I just didn't follow that argument. It seems to me that on the priority view, it's always better if people become better off. If they become better off, then the extra value gets less. But there's nothing bad about the average value getting less. So I've just wondered why you thought that the priority view had to appeal to average rather than total.
Well, the reason I don't talk about a total moral value is that I want to separate two principles.
And well, but the priority view differs from utilitarianism in that it says that it's not the total sum of benefits. It's the total weighted sum of benefits. That's the only difference.
Yes.
You give greater...
But consider the two principles that I express prioritarianism in.
Yeah, but I just reject the second one. The prioritarianism never appeals to the average value.
But that gives the same result, that those two principles. It's just sort of... separates two principles that are combined in the claim about weight.
Yeah, but the difference is if you take the priority view to say things are in one way better if the average moral value of benefits is greater because everyone's worse off, you get the absurd result that things are in one way better if everyone's worse off. If instead the priority view combines the principle of utility with a principle that how much more it makes the outcome better depends on how well off they are, then you never refer to the average value. You only refer to the total weighted sum of benefits. So you can't, as it were, claim that the priority view ought to take the form which makes it open to your objection rather than the form which avoids the objection, which is what I intended.
But if we consider this series of cases...
Well, I'm about to turn to those, because those raise a different question.
Yeah.
I do agree
with that. But I use those cases to argue that in one respect, prioritarians, they say about the first...
Yeah, but look, what you're... those cases involve different numbers of people in existence,
yes,
and they raise different questions, and I'd like to turn to them. But before we do that, if you take the cases that I actually considered, where there's the same people who exist in all of the outcomes, I'm simply saying to you, surely I can be right in saying that the average moral value of the benefits that people receive is irrelevant. It's only the total sum of weighted benefits to which the principle appeals. Now, I don't see why you think a prioritarian can't say there's nothing good if everyone becomes badly off so that the benefits that they receive have greater average value. There's nothing good about that on my version of the priority view. And that's because it differs from utilitarianism only by giving extra weight.
Yeah, but I can't make my case without appealing to...
Okay, I'll turn to the second one. Okay, right. I'll turn to the second one then. Right, well, before I turn to your cases, I want to consider a range of similar cases. This involves a set of different possible outcomes, in all of which the same 100 people would exist. So it differs from yours in that respect. In one outcome, one person is at level 100. Everyone else is at 0. Second outcome, two are at 50. Everyone else is at 0. Four at 25. Everyone else is at 0. And then at the end, you get everyone at 1. Okay. Now, it is true that on the priority view, it would be better if this 100 benefits were shared out equally than if they all went to one person, or if they all went to two people. But then so does the egalitarian think that, and so does the utilitarian. So when you've got the same people in all of the outcomes, it is indeed desirable if the welfare is diffused among these people, but that's no objection. Now, if we turn to your case, the difference is that in your case, different numbers of people would exist in the different outcomes. Now, I think I may have misled you here by a phrase in which I introduced the priority view. I said it's enough to consider different states of affairs in all of which the same set of people would exist. Now, that was misleading. You might have taken me to meant that if we reach a view about those cases, which I call the same people cases, then we can apply our conclusions to cases in which different people would exist or different numbers. But when I said it's enough to consider same people cases, I didn't mean because then we can apply it to all cases. I meant we've got enough to discuss. If we tried also to discuss cases with different numbers of people, that raises a whole new set of questions. So my priority view was explicitly designed for cases that don't raise these special puzzles when different numbers of people exist. However, I'll now turn to what you say about what the priority view implies in those cases. You say that on the priority view in an earlier paper, it's better to bring the new people into existence because that's benefiting people whose level is lower because they're at the neutral level of non-existence. And that involves assuming that when the priority view says benefits to people do more to make the outcome better when they're worse off, we include all of the merely possible people, people who never exist. Because on your account, well, they're worse off than people who are having a good life because they're at level zero. Now, I didn't intend the principle to apply to people who are merely possible and never exist. You could have a similar objection to the egalitarian view. You might say, well, rather than giving more resources to people who exist, you should bring new people into existence because they're worse off, because they're at the neutral level. They're worse off than all the other people. Now, you rightly say that egalitarian principles aren't meant to cover people who never exist. It isn't a relevant inequality that we exist and they don't. And the same is true for the priority view. When I say it's more important to benefit people who are worse off, I'm not including merely possible people who never exist. Now, you might then say...
There's a difference here because you can consider different outcomes.
Yeah.
You don't consider bringing people into existence. You just consider outcomes that already exist. You have one outcome where there's one person who's well off at 100, level of 100. And you consider another outcome.
But you're comparing that with an outcome in which that person doesn't exist. That's why you say that in this example, the priority view, rather than having one person at level 100, it'd be better to have 100 people at level 1. Now that's implying that the second is better because the benefits would go to people who otherwise wouldn't exist.
Yes.
And
yes.
In that respect, badly off. And I'm saying, well, it isn't meant to apply to people who never exist.
But if you make a judgment about these two outcomes involving different numbers of people,
yeah,
you can have the view that one outcome is better or they're equally good or whatever, and take no view that they are better because they are better for somebody, namely people who come into existence.
Well, I thought your main objection to the priority view was that it claims it's better to have 100 people at level 1,
yeah,
because that's benefiting people who
no,
otherwise are
no,
at a
no,
neutral
no,
level.
No, 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 the claim is just that it's the weight of the benefits are higher.
Yeah, but that's because you're saying, I mean, on the priority view,
the weight
of a benefit is higher if it goes to someone who's worse off.
Yeah.
Well, you're assuming that if you bring someone into existence, that benefit is going to someone who would be badly off.
No, no, that's a different claim. You can make the claim that the benefits have a greater moral weight because they go to somebody who is badly off at the level of one. In the last outcome, without saying you're benefiting somebody by having brought that person into existence.
Well, that's why I switched to my case, in which all the same people exist in all the outcomes, and either one of them is at 100, or two at 50, or they're all at one.
Yeah, but some people say Jeff McMahon would take the view that a case where you have more people existing, that outcome can be better, even though it's not better for anyone.
Yes, I agree. It might be better, although it's not better for anyone. But, I mean, there are really two points. One is, the priority view, as I defined it, applied to cases in which all of the same people would exist. When you turn to cases in which different people would exist, or different numbers, that's completely different. It raises very different problems.
Yeah.
And I think if some principle looks pretty plausible in cases where the same people exist, you can be justified in accepting that principle. Although it's not clear when you turn to cases in which different numbers of people exist, what's the wider principle which in same people cases would imply the conclusion you accept. I mean, here's another example. Many people think that an outcome can't be worse, all things considered, if it's worse for no one. That's the person affecting claim star that you discuss. Well, that's plausible in cases in which all and only the same people exist. But once you switch to cases in which different people exist, it's very easy to see how an outcome can be worse, all things considered, even though it's worse for no one. That's true if the result of our energy policies is people who live two centuries from now who are at a low level, although their life is worth living, rather than different people who would be at a higher level. So I think it isn't an objection to the priority view as I described it, which applies only to cases with the same people, that it's not obvious what we should say about cases in which different numbers of people would exist.
But
the other point I made, I wasn't just saying my version of the priority view doesn't apply to cases in which different numbers of people exist. I was going to say, well, if you look and see what the priority view might imply with respect to those cases, there's a huge difference between saying there's a greater moral value to a benefit of being at level one if that comes to someone, some actual person who would otherwise be at zero, and saying there's a greater value if it comes to someone who otherwise wouldn't exist at all. So in other words, just as it's plausible to say that if you believe that inequality is bad, you're not saying, well, one of the things that's very bad is that existing people are much better off than people who never exist. That's a bad inequality. You can actually say, no, that isn't a bad inequality because our principle applies only to actual people. I think the same is true of the priority view. The extra moral
these
value
are actual people in my outcomes.
Only in one of the two outcomes. And you're saying bringing them into existence, if they come into existence, the priority view has to say that benefit matters more because it comes to people who otherwise would be at the zero level because they don't exist. And in other words, I'm saying two things. One is, I intended it only to apply to the same people cases. Two, you can see why that's natural, because there's a huge difference between the way in which some people are worse off than others if they exist and are worse off, or if they never exist. You'd expect those to raise quite different questions, and I think they do.
Well, you make it impossible to sort of separate. In order to separate those two aspects, I want to separate, you need to consider those cases where the sum of benefit is held constant, whereas while the the moral weight of those benefits varies. You can't consider that situation unless you bring in a different number of people, because otherwise the situation would be you can only change.
In my example, they're the same 100 people. The sum of benefits is the same if one person gets all of the 100, or two get 50, or four get 25, or all of them get only one. The sum of benefits is the same. Yeah. But on the priority view, in that case, it's better for the benefits to be shared equally between all these people. That's a case in which they all exist in all of the outcomes. So you can draw the distinction you want when you're considering a case like that. Your main objection to the priority view, I think, wasn't the one that applied to bringing extra people into existence, but was the claim that on the priority view, if everyone falls from a high level to a low level, that's in one respect a change for the better. Because the average value of the benefits they get is greater. And my initial response is that I don't know why you think the priority view gives any weight to the average value of the benefits rather than the total weighted value of all of the benefits. That was the view that I put forward. And I don't see why you think...
Well, if you consider these cases, first... The series where the sum of benefits is constant.
Yeah.
And.
Well, that's true in my example, in which there are 100 people. In all of the outcomes, the same people, the sum of benefits is the same. You either have 100 going to 1, 50 each to 2, and the other 98 get nothing, or 25 for 4, and the other 96 get nothing. That is a case in which the total sum is the same. But it's distributed differently between these people. And there, I think most of us would think that it is plausible that it's better if it's shared.
But that's a situation where egalitarianism would yield the same result.
Yes, I know, but I thought you were saying that this is a case in which the priority view has the implausible implication that when the average value of the benefits is greater, that's in one way better.
Yeah, but in this sort of situation, you change the relative position as well. Whereas this isn't changed in my case.
Surely we're considering two cases. There's the simpler form of your objection. You say, well, suppose everyone is at 100, and then they all suffer misfortune, and everyone is at only 10. Now, your main objection is that on the priority view, that is in one way a change for the better.
Yeah.
Because on the priority view, it's always better if the average value, moral value of benefits is greater. And I'm just denying that.
Yeah, I know.
The priority view doesn't say that. And then I thought you said, well, we can show that the priority view has to give weight to the average value of benefits. Because, and then you turn to a case in which different numbers of people exist. Mm. Now, I think that doesn't show that the priority view has to give weight to the average value.
But I don't think you've said what your view would be about this case on the blackboard.
My view is I think it would be clearly worse if instead of 1 billion people at level 100, you've got 100 billion people at level 1. That's like what
that,
I call
that would
the
be worse. That would be worse on prioritarianism.
No, not on prioritarianism.
No, but that's what my question is about.
Well, the priority view doesn't even apply to those cases.
But what would it say if it were applied? Because, as I said, I don't need to claim that we do apply prioritarianism. Prioritarians apply the view of those cases. The question is...
What it might say, if you compare 1 billion people at level 100 to 100 billion people at level 1, the priority view says, well, the second is in no way better. Because if these extra people come into existence, that isn't benefiting people who otherwise would be at a bad level. So the priority, you can just say, it isn't better for people.
Irrespective of whether it's benefiting people, there are benefits at a low level, and they would have greater way to call them prioritarians.
Well, no, because the point is, the priority says that a benefit has greater weight if it comes to someone who, without that benefit, would be at a lower absolute level. And I'm saying that doesn't include people who never exist. People who never exist don't count as being at a low absolute level. They just don't enter into the reasoning.
All right.
Have I missed?
Think there is you can formulate prioritarianism as saying that a benefit to somebody who
otherwise wouldn't.
You don't have to say who otherwise wouldn't exist and so on. You're just looking at an outcome. You say,
well, how this person in this outcome from in the other outcome. No, it's a comparison.
You don't have to. You just look at the outcome and say, here are benefits to somebody at a very low level. They're all benefits to somebody at the level of one.
Well, you could similarly say, in applying the egalitarian principle, that
we
ought to bring more people into existence because then fewer people will be at level zero. And all that I'm saying is that,
that's a separate issue, whether you benefit people by bringing them into existence. That's a separate issue from judging these outcomes people. Because you can say that these outcomes are equally good or better, even though they're not better for anyone, because somebody is brought into existence. But I think we should let other people speak as well.
All right, we've got plenty of time for questions. Let me see who's interested in asking what we've got. We'll start with Julian.
So let's take a bunch of cancer patients. There's two different groups. There's the older, good prognosis group, and there's the younger, worse prognosis group. So you could give one person who's 40 years old 100 months of life, or you could give 100 people who are 30 years old 1 month of life. So I take it, and these are all people who exist, but they've got different sorts of cancer. On your prioritarian view, it would be better if we gave the 100 30-year-olds 1 month of life.
Prima facie, yes. And I think that's what most people would think. If you're giving a greater sum of benefits, which is more fairly shared, and it's coming to people who otherwise would die younger and thus be worse off, sounds unequivocally better.
Well, why? I mean, this does seem to be a kind of version of the repugnant conclusion. If you apply it to large numbers of cancer patients who each get smaller increments of life.
Well, look, I agree. Some people think that if there are lots of people who exist, and some of these people are very badly are very well off, and the others are very badly off, some people think, well, there's no point in taxing the rich and spreading it out among the starving masses, because each of them will get such a small benefit that it doesn't count. Well, I think that's just a mistake. Each of these many people would get a benefit, and the total sum of benefits would be much greater. Not only would the total be greater, but it would be more fairly distributed. So I don't think there's any difficulty about thinking that when you can give a greater total sum of benefits to people who would otherwise be worse off, that that's a change for the better. Now, some people think if you go down to benefits as small as, you know, an extra minute of life or something, no sum of benefits like that could add up to anything significant. And I think that's just a very deep mistake. I described the two cases in the bad old days, the torturers. Each turns the dial on the instrument, inflicting great pain on one victim. But then, under the new system, the machines are so arranged that they go round and round. And together, they impose just as much suffering on all their victims, but none of them makes any perceptible difference to any of the victims. Now, that's perfectly possible, and it's clear that they're imposing great suffering on their victims, although because the effect of each act is so thinly spread, it doesn't make a perceptible difference. So, I mean, I agree, when you consider benefits and harms that are very small, there's a tendency to think, well, they just don't count. I think that's a huge mistake. But now, how was your question applying to, I think, the main issue between Ingmar and I? Because I say, on the priority view, what makes the outcome better isn't that the average benefit that people get has more moral value. It's that the total sum of weighted benefits is greater. That was my version of the priority view. And Ingmar's objection is directed at the average version that says, no, it isn't the total sum, it's the average value. And that's a completely different view, and no, I don't see why.
That is my view. My view is that it consists of two principles. You can divide your one principle into two principles, and I was using these cases to separate those.
One is, it's in one way better if there's a greater total sum of benefits, and it's in another way better if, because people are badly off, the benefit to each person has greater average moral value. And I'm saying, I just reject that version of the priority view, which seems to me to have no plausibility at all.
Now, we agree about that. Right.
Yeah, but I thought your objection was to the priority view. Well, then you should consider the version that says, when people benefit, that makes the outcome better, and it does more to make the outcome better, the worse off they are. Now, you add up all of the benefits, and you give them greater weight if they go to people who are worse off. And that's nothing to do with the average benefit.
I was considering a version of prioritarianism, which applies to cases where your version doesn't have an answer at all.
Oh, you mean cases involving different numbers of people?
Yeah.
Yes, I wasn't discussing those cases.
No,
can I move you along? We have plenty more people asking for questions, so take one over here.
So this is related, I think, to the second.
Sorry, no, I was pointing to the person in front of you. I'll come back to you later.
I was just wondering about the fact that, you know, the priority view is not supposed to apply, I guess, I presume, to cases of different identities, right?
Those are different cases.
Right.
Yeah, but that's also true that you need to think carefully about those.
Okay.
Because, as I say, many people think one of two outcomes is worse for one person and better for no one. It must be worse, at least in one way. But once you turn to cases in which different people exist, that leads to a contradiction. Mm-hmm. So those are different cases which need to be handled in a different way.
Right. Given they're handled differently, is there going to be an equivalent sort of priority view or something that will have some sort of effect to adjudicate? For example, you talk about the cases of the same number, but you have this gradual, you know, different distribution of how these resources are. So we can imagine cases where it's just we have these different distributional schemes with the same total benefits, but just different identities of people in these various groups. You can just imagine, you know, different...
Well, those need different consideration.
Right. I was wondering, are there going to be any considerations on your view that will make one of these situations more preferable, better overall than the other? And if so, will they be, you know, something like the prioritarian view, or will they be something like...
Well, look, I mean, let me try and be more positive. I'm sorry I've been rather rude. Ingmar has well pointed out that if you consider cases in which different numbers of people exist, and you ask what should the priority view say about such cases, if you said that people's coming into existence and being at a low level should be treated as a case of a benefit that has greater value because it goes to someone who would otherwise be badly off, then the priority view so applied leads to something like the repugnant conclusion. Now, that's well worth pointing out. And the moral is, well, the priority view shouldn't take that form. Now, and if someone says to me, look, I agree the priority view, as you described it, seems to do jolly well in cases in which all the same people exist. But what about these other cases? What do you say about them? That's a perfectly fair question. But I think we can be confident I mean, let me put it this way. We can be confident that some principle is right in cases where all and only the same people exist, though not knowing what the wider principle is from which this could be derived. And that's because it will normally be the case that there are several quite different wider principles which will all have the same implications. And one example of that is the difference between the average principle of utility and the total principle of utility. They coincide in cases with all the same people, but they're completely different. And so I agree, there may be quite different principles that would all support the priority view in same person cases, and we haven't yet discovered which of those different principles we should appeal to. So there's still work to be done, but the claim there's work to be done isn't that there's an objection to the priority view in same people cases. That's really all I meant.
Okay, there was the next question.
Yeah, so I mean, this is on just a similar point. So, Ingmar, you use these cases and say, well, this allows us to see that authoritarianism violates the person affecting claim, but in these two cases, you seem to assume that the person affecting claim, in conjunction with a total view of population ethics, that the total view itself is enough to violate the person affecting claim. So if, for example, it's in conjunction with utilitarianism, which is the classic case that doesn't suffer from the classic theory that doesn't suffer from the person, from the leveling down objection in the fixed population case, and then have one person at 100 and 100 people at 2, the second outcome is better according to utilitarianism than the first, but it's not better for them anyway. Because there's some people that don't exist in one.
Well, I actually think that when you bring someone into existence with a life worth living, that should be counted as a case of benefiting the person. I wouldn't want actually to say, oh, you're not benefiting them. The point I was making was a slightly different one. It's whether we should think, look, there are these possible people who may never exist. Ought we to worry about them? Because after all, if they never exist, they'll be at the zero level. And I was saying, the intuitions behind the priority view don't, I think, say, well, we need to think about... I mean, there's a very nice quotation I have from Niels Holtzschuh here. He says, maybe argue, if the priority view assigns no weight to possible people, that's unfair. Refusing to take into account the possible people whom you could benefit is morally arbitrary on a par with racism, sexism, and speciesism. And I'm saying it isn't. Giving priority to benefits to actual people isn't objectionably arbitrary or unfair, because people who never exist are not being treated unfairly when we fail to bring them into existence.
But I was trying to make a claim which I can't get Derek to accept, apparently. And this is that in cases where you consider people of different numbers, and you can say that one outcome is better than another because the total amount of benefits is great or whatever. Although it isn't better for anyone, you haven't benefited anyone by bringing him into existence. You can separate those two views. That's what I've been sort of trying. That point I've been trying to make, which Derek hasn't bought.
I mean, I reject the person affecting claim more sweepingly than you do, because I think you thought we could at least accept the claim.
Yep.
That one of two outcomes can't be worse, all things considered, if it's worse for no one. I think that's a mistake.
Yes, but irrespective of what claims we're inclined to make, I'm just sort of trying to make the point that it is possible to take the view that those outcomes involving different people, that some of those outcomes might be better than somebody outcome.
Yeah.
For instance, you have more people at a high level, for instance.
Yeah.
You can say that outcome with more people at a high level is better than one with fewer people, even though it isn't better for anyone.
I agree.
You haven't benefited anyone by bringing them into existence.
I agree.
You could say that. Yeah.
But how is that an objection to the
my point is that in talking about these cases in the series, I'm not saying that in the last case, we've made a situation better for anyone. I'm only saying that you could make the claim that that outcome is better, even though you don't claim it's better for anyone.
But the only question, as far as I can see, it's this, is that the priority view says a benefit has more value if it comes to someone who's at a lower absolute level.
Yes.
And the question is, should we count among the people who are at a low absolute level people who don't exist? And we could answer that either way. You beautifully pointed out, which was new to me, that if we say yes, let's include among the people who are at a low absolute level all the people who never exist, the priority view then leads to a worse version of the repugnant conclusion, to which I think, well, that shows that the priority view shouldn't take people who never exist as being at a low level. People who never exist just don't count as far as the priority view is concerned. But, I mean, you're right to show that that would not be a plausible way to extend the priority principle to those cases. You're right.
Should we take another question?
Yeah.
I'm just not sure I understood why what you conceded to the very first question doesn't show why prioritarianism would be susceptible to the repugnant conclusion. So the example was...
Well, I thought they were all people who were going to die at 30. But go on with the question.
And so why would that... Sorry,
well, the question is it repugnant to think that instead of giving 40 months to one person, you should give 1 month to 40 people? I'm inclined to think that if 40 people have one more month in which to make their farewells to those they love and so on, you're going to be doing more good and it'd be more equally shared, rather than giving the whole 40 months to one person.
But if you do it with many, many more people, so the time span that you're giving to the individuals
gets smaller and smaller.
I thought that was exactly, in fact, precisely the repugnant conclusion.
No, that isn't the repugnant conclusion at all. I mean, the point is, if you have a choice of either saving a single person from a whole year of pain or giving a single person a whole year of life, or giving one more minute of life or one fewer minute of pain to each of a million people, lots of people think, well, obviously you should give the one person a whole more year rather than just giving 1 minute to a million people. Well, a year is half a million minutes, so if you always did that in those cases, everyone would die younger. I mean, yes, it would be worse for everyone. And I mean, I do agree that when the effects are so small as to be imperceptible, it's plausible for people to think, well, they just don't count. And I think that's a huge mistake, as my case of the harmless torturers was meant to show. None of my torturers makes any perceptible difference to any of the victims, but they together inflict great suffering. And that's what we're doing with global warming. You know, each act is not going to make a perceptible difference, but together we're doing tremendous harm. And the repugnant conclusion isn't about those cases. It's the claim that rather than a billion people with a wonderful quality of life, it would be better to have an enormous number whose lives are hardly worth living. That's completely different.
But in the thousand torturers case, you've got individuals that suffer greatly at the end of it. When you're simply giving an extra minute or second to a large number of individuals, no single individual...
No, on the contrary. The point is, if you keep doing that, and you can do it once for everyone in the population, there are a million people, okay? And on a million occasions, you either give one more year to a single person.
Oh, that's a different sort of case. So we're talking about whether, just on a one-off case, a million people each get a second. On your view, that's a better case than giving somebody a whole extra year. On the prioritarian view. Well, none of those individuals gets any more than a second.
Yeah, but look. The point is, the reasoning is just the same. You're saying if people's suffering is shorter by only 1 second, then it doesn't make any difference. It does. You're imposing a greater sum of suffering. I mean, an extra torture comes along and he turns the thing once on each machine. Each of the victims suffers a bit more. And he's imposing a greater sum of suffering. But you are right that some people think that it's okay to act in a way like this, provided you know that few people will do it. Although, if you know that many people are going to do it, then it's wrong. Now, I actually think that's not defensible. The point is, you get to see the harm you're doing when you consider many people doing it. But you're doing just as much harm when many people do it. But those really are different cases, because those are about what weight we should give to benefits and harms that are trivial or imperceptible. And that's got nothing to do with the priority view.
John, a question. Yeah.
Well, is that all right if I ask Ingmar one question directly? Sorry, Ingmar. My question to Ingmar, then, and I'm sorry I had to come in late.
Yeah, I
missed something which will be the answer to this question. But let me ask it anyway. So you've got those two options drawn on the board, the one code on 100 and 100 code on 100. And I think you think that the first one is worse than the second. One code on 100 is worse than 100 code on 1. Now, it's not worse for anybody. I can't think of anybody it's worse for. And yet you say on the sheet that the principle that gives you that conclusion, P, could comply with this weaker personal function principle, according to which an outcome can't be worse, all things considered, unless it's worse for someone. So that seems a contradiction. Could I ask Derek his question? Derek.
Yeah.
This is about leveling down.
Yeah.
It isn't actually written down here, but you think that leveling down can't be better in any respect than not leveling down.
No. My claim was that it's not a decisive objection to egalitarianism, that on this view it's in one way a change for the better if the better off suffer in misfortune. As Ingmar says, there are other cases in which it's right to claim it's in one way better, although it's better for no one. And an egalitarian might say, well, I think that's true here too. But quite a lot of people find that implausible. And the point about the priority view is that it doesn't imply that it's in one way better.
So that's all. I think that I have this understood. So you do not actually claim that leveling down cannot be better in any respect?
No.
Okay.
I think it's implausible. But people like Tim can say, well, yeah, it's just...
Well, it would be nice to have your view about it.
Well, my view is that it is an objection which has some force, but I don't think it's decisive. I think we have to decide whether the priority view, which avoids this implication, is in other ways more plausible. And, I mean, here's one point. I read quite a lot of anti-egalitarian literature, and what they're all talking about is there's this, you know, impersonal thing, inequality, and it's got nothing to do with anyone's well-being. And the priority view does wholly avoid those worries. So what all I meant was, look, some people find this...
It's going to be put in favour of the priority view.
Yeah. There's an objection to Tidic egalitarianism, which has some force, which is completely avoided by the priority view. That was my claim. But I don't think the levelling down objection...
That was a misunderstanding. So can I ask you,
Martin? Yeah, all right. Let me repeat my claim. I was claiming that on prioritarianism, that outcome is better than this outcome.
Which implies that that outcome is worse.
Yes. And I also said that if prioritarians don't accept the view that coming into existence can benefit you, their claim that that outcome is better, all things considered, than that, will contradict the weaker philosophy.
Yeah.
which you believe we should reject, rightly.
I didn't have any view. I was just pointing out that it sort of...
But from what I can tell, your very own view contradicts this weaker version. Because you think that the one on the left is worse than the one on the right, which contradicts this weaker version.
No. I think that on egalitarianism, which is the view I expect, they're equally good.
No, but P... P is priority.
No, what I meant is your own view about P itself.
All right.
So, P itself, as described, says that the left is worse than the right.
The left is worse than the right, yes.
Okay. But that in itself is in conflict with the weaker personal affection claim.
Unless you take the view that bringing somebody into existence benefits those people. So this
I still don't see it.
Sorry?
The one on the left is supposed to be worse than the one on the right. Now, whether we take the view that bring people bad for them, there is no one for whom the one on the left is worse than the one on the right.
Unless you take the view which I would be inclined to take, namely that the non-existents are worse off, because in this case they have a benefit, but in this case they have neither anything of value nor anything of disvalue. So they're at a neutral level.
So the non-existent people are worse off.
Yes, comparatively speaking. If there are
no non-existent people.
Yes, but it would be true of them that they don't. There's nothing intrinsically good about non-existence, but there is something intrinsically good about this existence, even though it's very small. So, and
you say this is true of them, but you haven't anybody to refer to.
It could be the case that you refer to specific individuals, because you can have. As far and an over.
Yeah, there are non-existent people.
So
there are non-existent people.
They're just not actual.
We have time for a short one from Zach Beach.
So I have a question about this position about non-existent people in the debate and the scope of prioritarianism, specifically in the context of transgenerational justice. So I'm trying to ask whether or not prioritarianism has a time slice that it's devoted to, but I'll explain what I mean. So, take a situation where you have 100 people, but in 20 years you will have 200 people, because we just know this.
Yeah.
Right? Because 100 people will be born. And then you're assessing justice in two different time slices. Time slice A, where you have 100 people, and not yet the following 100 people. And then time slice 2, where you have 200 people. That is, you have 100 people as born. Can prioritarianism compare outcomes between situation 1, that is, before the 100 people have been born, and situation 2? Because those 100 people will exist eventually.
Oh, yeah, certainly. If you're comparing two ways in which history might go, a way that's somewhat better for people in the 20th century, but somewhat worse for people in the 22nd century, and the very same people would be better off in the 22nd or the 1st, there's no difficulty about comparing those, because you've got the very same people existing in both outcomes. I was merely saying that the principle doesn't apply to cases in which you don't have the same people in the outcomes.
Okay, so suppose we tweaked it a little bit, and one says that the consequences of one's actions in time slice 1 could result in 95 people existing in the second situation, rather than 100.
Oh, then they're going to be different people existing.
Then that's different people, and prioritism no longer applies.
No. Okay. Doesn't apply to that.
So even if the circumstance we're talking about may have a direct consequence on the future, that is, it's not two totally different worlds, it's that we're comparing 1 to 2, now all of a sudden this becomes outside the scope. I'm just trying to clarify exactly the principle that we're talking about that allows the exact scope to find the terms. I'm sorry if that was
wrong. Well, it just doesn't apply to cases in which different people exist in the different outcomes. It's only intended to apply to same people cases. And I can see someone might say, well, you know, you have to have a view about these other cases. Yes, but they're much harder. And because the priority view could be implied by a wide range of quite different wider principles, you can be fairly confident that it's the right view about the same people cases, even though you haven't yet worked out which is the wider principle from which it should be derived. That's my view.
So please join me in thanking Ingmar and Derek.